My good friend, the Reverend Dr. James Forbes, Jr., is Senior Minister Emeritus of the Riverside Church in New York City and serves as President of the Healing of the Nations Foundation. When I called Jim and asked if he would be on with us again, he said, do I need to study to get ready for the conversation that we're going to have? And I said, no. Your life has done that, and that is true. As our own nation faces enormous challenges to healing, I thought it would be invaluable to have Dr. Forbes back with us today to talk with us about what he knows about healing. Jim, welcome back to State of Belief Radio.
Always a pleasure to be with you, Walter.
You know, the last time we were together on this show was last September. You spoke as passionately and as urgently and as angrily as I've heard you about the powerful ways race and racism continue to divide this country. A few weeks into the new administration, are there any glimmers of hope on that front?
Well, how do you add it up? I think the more I look at things, the more I assume that the kind of mathematics we need would be calculus, because that's very complex. It has multiple functions, etc. For an example, even if the attention to COVID and now a new administrative approach gives evidence that we are likely to get the vaccine and all of this, there is still talk about almost fear of naming when the State of the Union is going to be given because there may be plans to do mischief again on that. So let me just say, my mama used to talk about six in one hand and half dozen in another. So for all of the good news, it feels like if you really put forth your effort, you could find some bad news too. But on balance, I have to believe that the manifestation of ugliness on January 6th is likely to make a lot of people embarrassed at the ugliness and not wanting to have it identified with their ethnicity. Well, there are some reports that some groups are beginning to say there's an ugliness that they don't want to be identified with. But I just think in general, don't you imagine that a whole lot of white people that are observing the gross criminality in high places, the duplicity on a congressional level, the hypocrisy. Don't you think a lot of folks say, don't mess up whiteness. I'm white. I mean, I'm not white, but wouldn't they say, I'm white. I don't want to be ugly white. What is it that white people would be embarrassed about being manifested in white community that would make them shame that they're white? What is that? What would that be? What would they be ashamed for their children to hear to be their behavior, their response to democracy, to people who are different from themselves? What would make folks shame anymore?
How important is it to have diverse backgrounds and experiences represented by the people who lead us?
I would say that if you're going to lead people, you do a better job if you have empathy with them, if you know what they're going through, if you know the pressure points that are likely to bring dismay, disappointment, I would imagine it's hard to lead people that you don't know, or at least that you do not have an empathic relationship with.
Mm-hmm. Jim, it's a cruel truth that simply discussing the realities of institutionalized and individual racism today can trigger some Americans and cause them to sink even more deeply into denial. Is there a way to approach this so that yields maximum benefits? And I'm thinking particularly of the mandate for religion to finally speak the truth in the places where it hasn't.
Well, I think that a positive approach has got to be given a little bit more attention. I mean, the other day I saw on Rachel Maddow's show where some Sikhs were teaching people a dance mm-hmm. in Canada.
Saw it too, yes.
Yeah, and I thought, yeah, I had thought about this. I had said, if I had a lot of time to try to improve relationships between blacks and whites, I would do what I did in a sermon. I preached a sermon on the prodigal son, and when it came to the house after he had come back home, there was Jesus says there was singing and dancing. And I asked people, what kind of dancing you think they did? And I said, if you're black Pentecostal, you thought they did shouting. But I said, really, you know what I think they were doing? I think they were doing the electric slide. And I said, that's it. What I should do is I should get jobs preaching in white churches that ended up having my musician there, and that at the end of the service we'd have this this party for the prodigal son, and it includes electric slide, especially since that doesn't mean black men dancing with white women, because people got a thing about that. I think it reflects something of the evils of the past, but I ain't going to bother that now. But wouldn't it be wonderful for blacks and whites to have more time during the electric slide together? That is to say, the reality is that God, who from the beginning wanted to develop the beloved community, knew that if you create a situation where people are enjoying each other, you'd improve their health immeasurably.
You know, I've seen and heard your music and singing in a sermon, but I haven't yet seen the dance, and I'm ready to see that.
If you get me a gig down there, I'll promise to preach Luke 15, and the title would be "This Party Is for Everybody."
All right.
Let me tell you, I just want to ask white people all over the nation, y'all, can you imagine? Instead of being angry, apprehensive, fearful, scared of us, suppose we just agreed that we're going to treat each other decently and let's just have some fun together. How many white people think it would be more fun if they could have positive and enjoyable experiences with black people than those who think that they will thrive better if they can suppress black votes and black power enough that they don't have to be apprehensive about the loss of their white power, which would give them more satisfaction?
You know, Jim, there is such contempt and hatred at the political extremes in this country. I do believe that the vast majority of people don't feel this deep-seated rage at those with whom they disagree, but there has been no let-up in these feelings constantly being stoked, particularly in social media. What are some ways that we can start seeing people with whom we disagree as more than just enemies?
Well, I think, praise God, I mean, you know, I go for Romans 8:28. All things work together for good. To the COVID-19 has taught us that it doesn't matter whether you like people or whether you don't like them. The chances of our returning to a positive normal is that until we all get the vaccine, we're all imperiled. I'm not sure that every news network buys that theory, but I think it seems to be pretty strong that that COVID-19 is teaching us that there are some things in life which only if we arrange to promote the well-being of all of us will any of us be in good shape for the future. I don't care whether you're Republican and I'm a Democrat, or whether I'm a Pentecostal and you an Episcopalian, doesn't matter. I don't care what your religion is. Look, let's just decide that we're going to all get the shot, man. Get the shot. Let's all get the vaccine, not because I like you, but because of self-interest. My prospects of a good life will be greater if I provide for your health as I provide for my own.
You've done such extensive work in areas of conflict and contention. What lessons can help us get to where we need to be?
Well, first of all, why don't we say that you don't have to be a scholar to know that certain data suggests that what brought us out of our ancient animal background before we were civilized, certain things helped us to become a civilized society. Like we discovered that you want to survive, isolation and loneliness are not likely to be as good for you. We have found out that certain kinds of foods you eat are likely to be better for you. Mm-hmm. We have discovered that certain exposure to sunlight will help your vitamin D deficiency. That people that have quality relationships long term learn to deal more with stress, so that social interaction, exercise, nutrition, relationships, all these things that help us to deal with stress positively contribute to the quality of our lives. I think they've recently done a study where they had college students take lists of older people, and half of the older people were called daily by the college students, and the other half were not. But they found out that the older people who were called daily by the college students, their mood improved and their prospect for health improved. I think it's like, I think what we need to learn is that God was a pretty good teacher from the very beginning, that there are certain things that contribute to our health and well-being. And you don't have to be a science to know it. Mm-hmm. You just have to take time to figure out, my goodness, if I don't exercise, my health won't be as well. I won't get any sunshine. If I don't get some vitamin D, my bones won't be strong. Mm-hmm. It is, and also meanness. I wonder if we could get a theory, do a test. Let's get a grant to do a test. Which does meanness compromise your immune system? I think it does.
The ways communities and congregations have leveraged technology has brought people together in new and unexpected ways. during these last several months. You've been guest preaching all over the world, from what I see. And are there ways that these new forms of connection might help us overcome some of the self-inflicted divisions that are so damaging to us?
Well, as you remember, Dr. King used to talk about going through the South, seeing these beautiful churches with their spires to the sky, and he wondered, what do they talk about in those churches? The notion that there are such things we call white churches and black churches. Well, now, through media forced upon us by Zoom methodologies for our worship, white people will get a chance to hear black people. Mm-hmm. What I guess I would hope is, even after we get past the worst of this pandemic, I want to promote, not, you remember the good old Brotherhood Week where black folks would go to white churches? And white folks to,
sure.
I would like to make that more of a norm. I mean, hey, what about making it weekly? I remember at Riverside I did my Space for Grace. Why not let a church make a point that Wednesday night's prayer meeting is a meeting designed for, if you've got different ethnicities in your community, where this is the, I call it the World House Service, where as great a diversity as we can find, we build that service around pulling together the more diverse congregations and making it a free setting, and making it one where people can talk about their concerns, where they can give their petitions, where they can make their praise reports, as we did at Space for Grace at Riverside Church. I'd like to think that already we have learned through this pandemic that we can relate to each other, and I hope that maybe all the Zooming we've done will make us say, okay, when this virus is over, let's actually get together on a regular basis.
Jim, I know that in your life, mine too, that prayer and action are part of the same fabric. So what, right now, what are you praying for?
I am praying for God to announce from high heaven that racism is over. That's over, y'all. And for God then to move us to be partners with God in helping to create a world where we are one family together. That's really what I'm praying for. And actually, I'm looking for signs that God has already made that announcement, and that I am praying to God, Lord, help me to be an effective member of your dream team for bringing about the beloved community.
The Reverend Dr. James Forbes, Jr. is Senior Minister Emeritus of the Riverside Church in New York City and serves as President of the Healing of the Nations Foundation. He is a dear friend. Jim, your wisdom and your insights are so needed right now in particular. Thank you for taking this time to be with us again on State of Belief Radio.
Thank you so very much. I've enjoyed the conversation.